How do we respond to change and crisis? That's what we want to talk about in this particular session. What is the key to a highly successful business? I think, Polly, there's a really simple answer. Find out what the customer wants and give it to them. I think that's the key to it. I think that's what every new business or every old business ought to be looking at today. If you expect to be able to survive during the stressful, changing times that we're now facing in this decade, it is going to require an individual who is on the lookout to find what his customer needs, what his customer wants, and then be able to offer that customer that particular product. Number one, to be highly successful in business, we must innovate. Polly, what do we mean? We've been talking about the word innovate for a number of years now. We think we're innovative people, but what do we mean when we say that a business ought to be innovated? What are we talking about?
Well, the word innovate means to make changes. And so to survive in the changing times today, that individual or that the one in charge or of that business should be willing to make changes to meet the changing times. Also, the word innovation that we use quite often means the introduction of something new, a new idea, a new method, a new device. Be willing to make changes, whatever changes that's necessary to meet with our times today.
All right. Thank you, Polly. In other words, we need to be able to identify an unfulfilled demand and fill that demand with an innovative product or service. And when that happens, that company or that business is going to realize an unusually high profit. That's what it's all about. And that's what the changing times that we're now living in is going to call for. The old line thinking will no longer work. As I've already said, we are on uncharted waters. We've never been here before. Consequently, we're going to have to learn to be innovators if we're going to be able to furnish the product and the service that is needed in our changing, highly changing world. And to realize the high profits that a business needs, because profit is the lifeblood of any company. There has to be a continual profit being made, and we'll never do that by just following the pack. And that's what's been going on for a number of years, and that's what's been happening, particularly in these businesses that we've been hearing about, Polly, that have gone down, that have been unable to survive during the critical times that we're living in today with the changes that are being made in our economy. Those businesses that are going down were either not strong enough in their cash, or they were not innovators. They were simply following the pack, and following the pack will not allow survival, not even survival, during the coming critical times that we're in today. An ordinary company can earn extraordinary profits if it plans. Number one, you're going to have to plan. This is the reason that there's going to need to be a special knowledge and a special insight into the needs of people in your particular field or in your particular business. You need on a regular basis to be studying that field and understanding what the needs are of the people in that particular area. And as you realize what their needs are and then move toward meeting that need, fulfilling that particular desire for that company or that particular project, you're going to experience profits while other businesses are going down the drain. I heard yesterday on the news, Polly, that automobile sales are continuing to decline except in some areas. However, I heard that one company that manufactured automobiles is now picking up their profits to such a pace that they are making $1 million per week as they manufacture a certain automobile. And that certain automobile is a toy automobile. But it meets the need for children. It's something they want. It's something they're buying. It's something they're using. It's something that excites them. So you'll always see in a critical time like we live in today, economically, with high interest rates, inflation at an all-time high, that there'll be businesses that'll be failing and others that'll be making. Now, the interesting thing, Polly, is that often in the business that the people that we're talking to are in right now, there are people who are doing extremely poorly in that business. And then in that same kind of business across town or across the state, others are doing extremely well. Now, that bears out my point, that if we are going to profit during a time when things are shaky, when we're experiencing crises, and our economy is being strained as never before, we're going to have to become innovators. And that's the second thought. An ordinary company can experience extraordinary profit if they innovate. In other words, if they come up with new ideas, if they introduce new methods, new products into that particular field or that particular service. And I'd like to challenge those of you who are listening right now to begin to sit down, analyze the situation, and begin to dream about the needs of your particular company and the needs of people who have the need for your particular service or product, and decide what you can do that will meet the need of that particular individual or customer. And third, there's got to be management skill. Now, in developing strong leadership among your people, if you will develop strong leadership among them, you will be able to spend more of your time in management and in developing higher skill among other people than you otherwise would. So the challenge is that we embrace change and adversity. Something we've been saying for quite a long time, Polly, that an awful lot of people across the country have begun to get a hold of, and that is that we do not normally, and I do underscore the word normally, make meaningful changes except under stressful situations.
Perry, why is this that we don't make meaningful changes except under stress?
I think, Polly, the absence of a problem leads to the absence of thinking. People become lax. People become relaxed and become careless. Their thought pattern, their habits fall into a routine, and they're not keeping abreast the problem. Consequently, they do not stay equal to the challenge that is before them today. When we have stressful situations and we learn in stressful situations, we get a hold of real answers in our life. And I suppose one of the most classic examples that we could share of that would be the life of Walt Disney. Walt Disney, as you know, experienced 7 bankruptcies, had 1 nervous breakdown, but died a wealthy man. Now, what happened in his life? He learned each time he experienced bankruptcies a new level of money management. He learned at a new level how to produce a particular service to man that man wanted. And obviously, they've wanted it pretty bad. His company continues to do super good with him completely out of the picture. So we just kind of go along nonchalant if we don't have challenge that always comes under a particular stressful situation. Now, I want to say this, Polly, that I don't think that's the way it has to be. And I don't think that that all of the things we learn in life come through that. But if we're not learning them one way, we often will be presented with the challenge to learn it another way. I look in my own life, Polly, in our lives, because, you know, you and I have been in business together as a husband-wife team for many, many years. And one of the real economic backsets in our own life taught me at a new level to be more cautious in certain areas. I was already cautious in that area and was warning people on the job about this particular need, and yet it was being ignored week after week after week. And we finally came to the end of that particular project and found out we'd lost thousands of dollars. In fact, if you remember, we lost all the money that we had made up to that particular time in our life. We still had a home and 2 new automobiles and a fine ski boat, fishing rig, that kind of thing. But our money was all gone at that particular time in our life. I can tell you, Polly, I have never made that mistake again. And you're smiling as you hear me say that, because you know that from that day on, regardless of what some foreman said or what some employee said about, well, it takes too much time, or that's too costly to do that, I have said, I'm paying the bills, and that's one of the things I'll require of you if you're going to fill this position. So we learn at these levels. In marriage, same thing. People who experience difficulty in marriage and then work it out, they learn a lesson that few people ever learn. This is one of the reasons, darling, that we suggest to people that they never, when they're in a financial struggle, and I'm talking about somebody who's buying some of the consumer products on the credit, and then often somebody suggests they get a consolidation loan. One of the reasons, Polly, that you and I teach they should never get a consolidation loan is because they never learn anything in that. All you learn is a new place to borrow money. And there's no way you can borrow yourself out of debt. So people who go down and get a consolidation loan simply put the payment for the refrigerator and the payment for the washing machine and the payment for the TV and the money they spend on a vacation all into one package. They take the financial pressure off of themselves immediately. And the first thing you know, these people are right out buying another new car or another new gadget to satisfy their needs. They haven't learned one thing. So that person is going to, more than likely, down the road, another few months, is going to run into exactly the same thing. And I've read story after story of people who have done that very thing. They never learn anything. So for people who are struggling in that particular area, you know, we always suggest to them, work your way out of it. You know, give a written plan to your creditors. Tell them you can't pay the full amount, but this is what you can pay. Lay it out before them. I make so much money per month, and I need this much money to live on. This is the balance I have to apply to my outstanding debts, and this is how much I'll pay you, and this is how much I'll pay John Doe, and this is how much I'll pay Joe Smith, and right on down the line, until you get them all satisfied. And in so doing, you develop a knowledge that will help you work your way out of it. So we really don't learn a lot of things except under adverse circumstances. But what about change? I've just said that we ought to embrace change and adversity. I really believe that if we recognize change for what it is, we would welcome it like a long-lost friend. Because change also can cause our company to become more productive than any company if we innovate. In other words, if we're thinking, if we're out here trying to figure out what does the customer need, what kind of a product does he need, what kind of a service does he need at that particular time, then we're going to be able to embrace that change, and we're going to be able to move into the center of the stage with whatever product that particular person needs at that time. Success can be disastrous in our life because it can cause us to have tunnel vision. There may be opportunities all around us, but often in successful businesses, and this is the reason, Polly, that we've been reading about so many companies that have gone under, simply because in the midst of their success, all they could see was straight down the road. They were not looking to the side to find out what they could do to maintain their customer. They were not finding out what they could do as the market was changing or as the need of their client was changing. And so consequently, one day they woke up and there was no market for the product they had. And this will happen often to a very successful business. And this is the reason that we're hearing right now of a lot of really major, major businesses that are going under simply because they have tunnel vision. They're not looking to the side. In other words, they're looking at the profits, enjoying the high profits, but they're not offering the service of innovative products to the people that they're endeavoring to serve. And it's a real dangerous thing. So we need to identify the unfulfilled needs and the holes that are in the market. And this will require this person gaining knowledge. I think that a person in a business management position ought to be attending motivational seminars, every kind of a training that will help that individual relate to his business. I think it's the best thing he can possibly do today is get aside, hear how other people are doing things, find out what the need is, what the market trends are, gain an unusual insight and knowledge into that particular business. It'll prepare that individual to be able to recognize what the needs and the holes in that particular market is. And in any business climate, good or bad, there are great opportunities. Always have been, always will be. And I would encourage you to begin to look around, find out what your customer needs. Don't follow the pack. Don't learn from them, but don't just stay with the pack. You can become a leader in your own field. Leading businesses of the future are those that are now anticipating and planning and embracing changes. Isn't that exciting? That the individual who's willing to innovate, who's willing to look at the possibilities of building or producing a new product or a new service, that individual is going to be much in demand in the coming decade. And I think that we now face the energy shortage that we're talking about. There are going to be more opportunities than ever before, because somebody one of these days is going to say, listen, there's a need here, and I'm gonna help meet that need. And Polly, I really believe, in my heart, I really believe that God is going to give direction to some Christian businessman, a single individual, ideas about how to design something, motors, equipment, that will function on something besides just the energy that we've been accustomed to in the past. I believe God is going to give ideas and methods, just as he was able to put in Joseph's heart the knowledge of what was going on and how they could avoid that. To my knowledge, what Joseph did had never been done before. And yet, he was an innovator. He was open to the idea. And God spoke to him in a dream. And that's highly possible in our day, that God would speak to somebody, even in a dream, would speak to them as they literally were sitting, meditating, praying, thinking, asking God, help me be of service to my generation. Then God could birth in the heart of an individual ideas that would begin to change our entire situation that we're feeling an awful lot of pressure on today in the area of our energy. Predominant options are generally the options of the generation that is vanishing. Therefore, we should not be looking to those ideas that are presently being used, but finding out what are new ways to approach this particular situation. Innovators become leaders in their field and change the marketplace. I think this is true in all areas of life. I think this is particularly true in the area of the church. For many years, we've resorted to methods rather than a total reliance upon the Holy Spirit's direction in our lives in bringing men and women into the house of God. We've used all kinds of methods. We've used all kinds of gadgets. We've used all kinds of contests. I'm not putting these down. I'm not saying that God was never in these things. But I'm saying that if we will ask God what the needs of people are, and if we'll begin to meet the needs of people in our churches, God will cause the people to come. People will flock to the place where needs are being met. Doesn't matter whether that's in the church or out of the church, if needs are being met. I think the real idea is for every person in a spiritual leadership capacity, a key word ought to be that he is making sure that he is feeding, that he is fulfilling his role as a leader, that he is building their lives. He is edifying them. And as long as people's lives are being built, as long as they're being reinforced, people are going to come. When that fails to happen, there's going to be a decline in attendance anywhere that happens. Here's an interesting note. Don't fret that others are copying you. When that happens, you literally have become the leader of the pack and are upgrading your own industry. And it's one of the reasons that we ought to share, as we often teach, Polly, in successful money management, that we ought to share or give our ideas to other people. And then, of course, what happens, we literally become the leader in that particular field. And I think this is what God is endeavoring to do everywhere. He's trying to establish men and women who are Christians, born-again Christians. He is endeavoring to establish them in leadership roles in every area of our world today. I believe this as much as I believe anything in the world, that God is today raising up strong, strong leadership in our world. A purpose of that, of course, is that the world will recognize that and will say, that is the kind of a lifestyle I want, that's the kind of an experience I want, and will begin to investigate the church, the body of Christ, and recognize that they have it, that they have, that God's given direction in their life that has often left others behind in their own life. What appears to be obviously right is generally wrong. This is something, Polly, we've been saying for a number of months, everywhere we've gone. We've said in the marriage, I think that's a typical place, that if people are doing what's natural, they probably are doing it all wrong. Because they've seen the lifestyle of people who didn't make it work. You know, we see husbands griping at wives. We see wives nagging at husbands constantly. One is trying to change the other one. Each one not accepting the other one. And they're wondering why it don't work. Those are the natural things to do. And normally, if an individual is doing what comes naturally, they probably are doing it wrong. Not just in the marriage, but in the business world. Why? Because most of the ideas that the business world operates in are ideas that have come from the world system, not from God's plan. This is the reason that we're producing this particular seminar, so that people will get direction from God, not man's direction. Because we're not saying here, look to man for insight or innovative ideas. We're saying, look to God. Study the market. Analyze the changes that are being made. Ask God to help you know what to do to perform a particular service or a particular need for your particular company. Excellency can only be achieved by the few who take the path contrary to the multitudes. The individual who's willing to even though others are not going in that particular direction, if he's willing to stand alone, and I look back as I just, my mind just flashes back in history, Polly. I'm thinking about many men who stood alone in their field, but who provided something that has offered benefits to billions of people since that particular day. I'm thinking of the invention of electricity. I'm thinking about the light bulb itself. I'm thinking about the telephone. I'm talking about the airplane. Individuals were willing to be laughed at, but these men were innovators. These people were people that were asking for ideas that would change and meet the needs of people's lives. And they came up with an idea that did meet the particular need for that particular generation. These were ordinary men, but they were innovated. They were men that were willing to risk their reputation and allow a company to grow out of that innovated idea that would actually earn extraordinary profits. You know, Polly, there's only one reason to be in business, and that is if the business is going to make profit. There's no need of tying yourself down. There's no need of getting involved in something if it's not going to earn extraordinary profits. Now, there are many businesses, and no doubt the business that some of you are in today, you can look around and find some of those businesses are not doing well at all. And other businesses in the same kind of business are doing extremely well. But they are operated by men who are innovators. They are thinking men, men with ideas, men who are willing to get involved in things that are different or that have never been tried. I suppose one of my very best friends in this world today, a man named Rudy Jones, we have been friends for many years in our life, have worked together in all kinds of circumstances and situations and ventures, and I value this man's opinions and ideas at the very top. He's one of my closest friends. And if there is an innovator in the world today, Rudy Jones and his wife Marge are two of those people. I've heard Rudy tell this story about when he was just a boy in school, lived at La Mesa, Texas. That's kind of up northeast of Odessa, darling, where we lived for a number of years. His dad ran a radiator shop there, and Rudy was working in a 5 and 10 cent store, making about $30 a week, working after school, just part-time, but working and learning skills and doing things. And he came up with the idea, though it was brand new, he was an innovator, even as a boy, and I've heard him share a lot of ideas that would verify that, but this one is just exciting to me to tell about it. Rudy decided that he would try to sell fireworks at Christmas time, and he got in contact with a man that had the fireworks, and decided that he would buy about $150 worth of fireworks, and the man was going to give him 30 days to pay for it. And so Rudy, as just a boy, just a kid, went in debt and bought $150 worth of fireworks, and he went out. His dad had this radiator shop. It set right out on the highway. Rudy got an old, I guess it was a kind of an old vanity, had a no mirror that was broken off of it, and Rudy decided to set that up as his counter, and he took a sign. One sign came with the order of the fireworks, and he put that on an old board and nailed that across the supports on that old vanity, and run an electric cord out from his dad's radiator shop and hung this just a plain old glaring light bulb right up over that, and went in business. When his dad found out what he was doing, he said, "Rudy, that's got to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. You're going to eat those fireworks. There's no way you're going to sell them. Nobody's ever done it here, and you've gone in debt for them. I don't know how you're going to pay for them." Dad really gave him a fit over it. But anyway, Rudy would come home, get off 6 o'clock, work at this 5 and 10 cent store. He'd come home and just a few days before Christmas, and he'd work getting everything all set up and getting all prepared for the business that he was going to attract. And so about a week before Christmas, well, Rudy showed up 6 o'clock one evening and sat out there, and it was already getting cold and it was uncomfortable. But Rudy's light was glaring and his one sign was facing the street, and people were going by, but nobody looked like paying any attention. And boy, Rudy says that just a few days before Christmas, he began to wonder how those firecrackers were going to taste, because he was pretty sure he was going to have to eat them. He didn't know, and every day his dad said, "Boy, you really made a mistake, Rudy. This is not going to work. You've gone in debt, and I don't know what you're going to do about it." But Rudy just said he felt good that he had done the right thing, that it was going to make money. Rudy said just 3 or 4 days before Christmas, nothing had happened, hadn't sold hardly anything, and so he decided to take his mom in as a partner. And so he said, "Mom, listen, we got to keep that thing open of an evening while I'm still working at the 5 and 10 cent store. And so if I could get you to run it of an evening, part of the evening hours, then I'd take it from 6 o'clock on up into the night, and I'll split the profits with you, Mom, if you'll do it." His mom agreed to it. I'm sure a lot of this was done out of just sympathy for what Rudy was going through and to try to help him out of a hard place. But anyway, she agreed to do it. And it came right down to just a couple of days before Christmas, and Rudy says they had probably not sold over $30 worth of fireworks, just almost no sales at all. And looked like they were not. I mean, Christmas Day a couple of days away, but Christmas Eve, the people started showing up. And Rudy said by nightfall that people were lined up. They were lined up and down the road. There was no other place to buy fireworks. They'd been seeing that sign and that old light bulb shining out there telling them where the fireworks were at. And they were all making the preparations to come and buy. And here they show up on Christmas Eve. And Rudy said they sold out. Literally sold everything, sold every firecracker, every Roman candle they had. Didn't have a thing left. And Rudy had cleared about $300 in just a few days. Now here's a boy, just a kid, came up with the idea, developed a plan of a little business that would earn extraordinary income. Rudy said the following year he bought $500 worth of fireworks and went through the same procedure. Only this year, he decided he'd build him a building, and he'd paint it red, and he'd get other signs. And his dad again came back out and said, "Rudy, you know you're gonna lose everything you've made. There's no way you're gonna make any money out of this thing. You know, you're spending all this money on this building and on this paint, and going to a lot of trouble. This is not gonna last but a few days, and it's all gonna all be over. And now you've gone in debt for $500. I don't know how you're gonna pay that. I can't pay that for you." And Rudy said, "Dad, listen, it's going to work out. It's going to work out." Rudy set up the business and in a matter of a few days sold somewhere around $3,000 or $4,000 worth of fireworks. Still just a boy. Rudy got married a year or so after that, continuing to do this every year, Christmas and New Year's Day, and then the 4th of July. And ran it for 3, 4, 5 years after that, making extraordinary profits out of a little old business that just looked like, well, everybody'd overlooked it. Nobody thought of it. And when Rudy left, he said he gave it, the business, to his parents. Now then, Polly, that's been over 30 years ago, and Rudy's own testimony is that every year in about 15 days of work for his mom and his dad, they clear about $4,000 or $5,000 a year. Isn't that exciting? To know how a single individual, an innovator with an idea, turned a very few dollars into extraordinary profits. Now, those same opportunities are still available today. If an individual is willing to commit himself, to come up with an idea, to be an innovator, and to develop an idea that will meet a need for our people. You know, this is one of the things we've been saying from the beginning of this session, is that you need to find out what people want and give it to them. Just give it to them. Whatever their need is, find out what that need is and give it to them. This is what men have been doing all down through the ages. You've heard of the Xerox Corporation? A man by the name of Chester Carlson, born in 1906, was the man responsible for that corporation. At age 12, he did odd jobs to help his parents. Age 14, he was the chief support for his sickly parents. Rose up at 5 o'clock in the morning, washed store windows before he went to school. Afternoons, he swept the floor of the bank and also the newspaper office. On Saturdays, he worked from 6 of the morning till 6 in the afternoon. Then in junior high school, He was a part-time janitor and a printer's helper. In high school, still janitoring, and on weekends he worked at a chemical factory. And in college, he supported his widowed father, went on to earn a Bachelor of Science degree in physics, and wound up with a debt of $1,400. But in 1930, that was right in just the year after the Depression came, the need for a copier was evident, and he was working at a job in New York called New York Electronics, a patent firm. And in 1935, age 29, he began an intensive study to invent a copy machine. He saw the need, had the idea. He was an innovator, just like we've been talking about, and he decided to do something about that. 1937, he filed for an application for the electronic photographic machine, and it turned out that it didn't work. It was a form of dry writing, which wasn't effective. I guess you just say it was an imperfect machine. In 1939 to 1944, he was turned down by 20 companies that he tried to put it with and get them to help him continue the development. But in Columbus, Ohio, in 1944, a nonprofit research company, for 60% of the proceeds, agreed to take over and to help Carlson. Later, Carlson had to put in another $15,000 just to keep his 40% from dropping down to a 25% in the company. At that time, the Haloid Company bought the commercial rights, and in April 1947, Carlson received his first dividends. Now, look, this started way back there years ago, and here he is in 1947 getting his first dividend, and it's only $2,500. The Haloid Company then became the Xerox Corporation, put a copier on the market in 1954. It was a desk-sized copier. They put that on the market. And in 1966, the company that had helped to develop it had 5% of the stock, and it was valued at $2 million. Carlson died in 1968. He had earned a total of $150 million and gave $100 million of it to charity. All because this man was an innovator. This man turned a relatively insignificant beginning into an extraordinary profit. You know, I'm probably right now, darling, we're probably talking to somebody who says, you know, I've got all the circumstances against me. Everything doesn't line up just right. The circumstances don't seem to be just right. What do I do? I've always been amazed, darling, and in the Bible, I think one of the things that has amazed me through the years, that God just takes ordinary, imperfect men and women and does the job, whatever it is. Doesn't matter. And so, you know, wherever you're at right now, whatever you're experiencing right now, remember that, you know, if you'll commit yourself to God, if you'll open up your mind, become an innovator, and put the ideas that God has planted in your heart and in your mind, prepare yourself skillfully, God can take your abilities, and you'll be amazed at what you'll be able to do over the coming years, these critical years. This is the way you should respond in the changing times of crisis that we're experiencing here in the 80s.